As I'm recording this podcast, it is nearly 8 p.m. on May 18th, 2025. It's kind of a noteworthy time considering the topic of today's podcast because 98 years ago, about this moment, is when a tornado was about ready to rampage its way through downtown Indianapolis and smash into the Near East Side of the city. Welcome to episode 5 of Yesterday's Indianapolis, a podcast about the 200 plus year history of the Circle City. Today's topic is going to be about that tornado back in 1927. We're nearly at the 100 year mark, but today is the 98th anniversary of the tornado. So those of us in Indiana and Indianapolis are certainly no strangers to powerful storms and tornadoes. I mean, even in the past few days, Indiana's seen multiple tornadoes hit. And this season, we've had several tornadoes throughout the state, more than several, in fact, that have caused damage and injuries and deaths. So in this situation, May 18th, 1927 was predicted to be a kind of rainy, overcast, possibly stormy day. In fact, news reports in the local newspapers were saying that thunderstorms were expected later in the day. So throughout the day, there had been some showers. But in the evening, shortly before 8 p.m., which was as reported by the Indianapolis News, heavy winds began to roll in from the west and southwest, accompanied by lightning on the horizon, and the thunder was later described as rolled like pieces of heavy artillery. So clearly a storm was inbound. Wind picked up, lights throughout downtown flickered, and then went out. And that's when the storm really slammed into the city. And the next day, the Indianapolis News would describe the incoming storm as, quote, like the roar and hum of a fast-speeding railway locomotive or a high-powered airplane. The storm sounded its approach, but all too late because it did not give sufficient time to escape its wrath, end quote. And that's exactly it. I mean, in a time before weather radar and accurate weather forecasting, really it was the dark skies and the pickup of wind, which really warned folks there is something coming. In this case, it was a tornado. Now, the tornado came in through West Indianapolis on the west side of the White River, skipped over the river, and slammed into the west side of downtown right along Washington Street. And it had there were reports that it had been skipping through the county. In fact, there were reports of it of damage all the way over into the Ben Davis area and then kind of skipping along before it hit West Indianapolis and then jumped over the river. So when the storm crossed the river and hit the west side of downtown Indianapolis along Washington Street, one of the first things it hit was the water company's pumping station. The downtown pumping station, which is today, is still standing and is present in White River State Park. But at the time, it had a large smokestack, reported to be almost 250 feet high, and the wind was so strong that it brought down this stack, severely damaging a nearby warehouse. In fact, a night watchman at this warehouse was spared only because moments before the smokestack had come down, he had crossed the street to make a phone call. As the storm continued to move eastbound right along Washington Street, right into the downtown core, damage was widespread, although not structurally damaging. Windows were blown out throughout downtown, causing papers and documents from local office buildings to just fly all over. So imagine just the streets covered in paper and blowing debris and commercial building, like businesses such as the William H. Block Department Store, which still stands today. The building still stands at Illinois and Market Street. They had their windows shattered and their stock, you know, their goods that they were selling were damaged by not only the wind, but also the torrential rains which accompanied the storm. And they had stuff blown out into the streets as well. So you have downtown being struck, flying glass, flying debris, documents and papers from the office building swirling around. And one person actually had a bird's eye view of this, and that was Henry G. Cook. He was a firefighter who was stationed at the Fire Watchtower atop Merchants Bank Building, located at the southeast corner of Washington Street and Meridian Street. And that building today is known as the Barnes and Thornburg Building. And I actually did a blog post about this Fire Watchtower and its predecessors a few months ago, and I'll make sure I drop a link to that blog post in the show notes. But Mr. Cook had served as the firefighter in the fire tower for the previous 14 years. And he said, quote, I've been up here almost 14 years and have been through some powerful winds, but this was the worst, end quote. So he described to the local media how he watched the storm come in, and then it hit downtown. And, you know, he is at Merchants Bank Building is, I think, nearly 300 feet tall. And then the fire tower was even higher than that. At the time, it was the largest building in the city. The windows on the fire tower shattered. You have flying glass going everywhere, wind blowing, shuttering the building. You know, just imagine being that high and having a tornado force wind just hit this tower that was shuttering back and forth. And Cook described how he was torn. Should I stay here with all this glass and up in this structure that's bouncing back and forth? Or should I try to climb down the ladder to the roof of the Merchants Bank Building to go inside the building and try to escape? Obviously, you know, either option seems pretty terrifying. So Mr. Cook, or Firefighter Cook, decided to stay put in the fire tower with the broken windows as the storm raged all around him. So, you know, he rode out the storm, he survived, and then as the storm moved past the downtown, or as the tornado moved past the downtown area, he was able to watch it as it kind of skipped along towards the east side. And the whole idea of the fire tower was that he would have a pair of binoculars, observe a suspicious, you know, plume of smoke, and then be able to use a special phone that would go straight to fire headquarters and make a report. So as he watched this go on, he got on the line and did call fire headquarters, although how their line was still open when telephone service throughout the downtown was disrupted by the storm is unclear. But as the storms continued moving eastbound, it would pass where present-day Interstate I-70 and I-65 go along the east side. Of course, at that point in 1927, no interstates. But the tornado kind of jumped along, and then it really laid into it, really hit hard on the near east side. And there was actually a map that was published by the Indianapolis News a few days later, which showed the kind of, the title of the map was Where Tornado's Wrath Reached Its Height. And really, it followed a line along Washington Street, and in between Arsenal and about up to Keystone Avenue was the worst area where the tornado had really hit in a predominantly residential area. And most of the homes in this area were wood-framed homes, and they suffered greatly, especially along Hamilton Avenue, right across from like where Washington Street, there's Willard Park on the right on the south side of the road. Hamilton Avenue is a north-south street, residential street, and the tornado really slammed into that area, and there's tons of damage. Houses not only lost their roofs, lost siding, shutters, but then right along Hamilton in that spot, there's images where the tornado just leveled a good block of homes. And when I mean leveled, it's just piles of rubble. I mean, foundations are there, but there's just matchsticks every which way. Absolutely terrible devastation. And at the same time, you know, the wind was, you know, this was a large storm. And while its wrath was and devastation was certainly concentrated on the east side, the wind was spreading outward. In fact, down near Fountain Square, right near where the old White Castle, I think it was White Castle office or distribution facility was. I don't think it's there anymore, but it's just after you on Virginia Avenue as you cross the interstate. There was a religious revival going on at that location. And there was a big tent set up. And just as the winds came through, of course, the tent went airborne, and all the attendees went scattering to nearby homes for cover as this tent is flying through the air. So going back to Washington Street, really, homes and businesses were absolutely flattened in the area along Washington Street, right in the Willard Park area, and basically in between Washington Street and Michigan Street to the north. Near the intersection of Rural and Washington, the A.C. Hannon grocery store was completely destroyed. Its proprietor was initially stuck inside and reported later to the Star that he couldn't recall how he came to escape from the wreckage. Hamilton Avenue, just north of Willard Park, was where nearly a square block of homes was destroyed. There's actually a panoramic photo at the Indianapolis Historical Society's archives which shows this location, and I do have a blog post about this tornado that I'll put in the show notes, and you can look at these images, but it is an amazing image that you can really zoom in on that shows just the wide area of devastation right in the Hamilton Avenue area. Along Washington Street, not only were homes damaged, a few were destroyed, a lot lost their roofs, a lot had structural damage, trees were brought down, power poles and telephone poles were also brought down, and at the same time, when the power poles that ran the streetcar system, because East Washington Street heading towards Irvington was a major streetcar line, and when those power poles came down, the streetcar lines are unable to operate, although when those power poles came down along with electrical poles and telephone poles, they fell over the streetcar lines. And that, along with other debris that was in the road, including wrecked automobiles, even if there was power, the streetcars weren't going to be operating. And there's images of this, too, at the Indiana Historical Society, showing all this debris, all this damage in the roadway, along with the streetcar tracks, but no streetcars in sight, just damage and devastation. So going back to downtown, not only with downtown with the broken windows, businesses damaged, debris and paperwork flying all over the place, there was also damage on the west side of the river. West Indianapolis certainly suffered damage, the residential areas there, but also Washington Park, which was at the time the home of the Indianapolis Indians baseball team, and its location at the time was at where the Indianapolis Zoo is. It suffered damage not only to its scoreboard, but also some of its grandstands when the roof of a nearby railroad roundhouse, the Big Four Railroad had railroad yards in the area, the roof of the roundhouse, which was like a storage, I think of like an airplane hangar only for trains or a parking garage for trains. The roof of the roundhouse came up, flew over, and took out a chunk of the bleachers as well as scoreboard. So as the tornado moved on and then faded away, damage really doesn't seem to have expanded much beyond Keystone Avenue, although that area between Keystone and Arsenal on the east and west, with Washington Street on the south, Michigan Street on the north, that area suffered significant damage because, again, that's where Hamilton Avenue was located. That's where basically block was leveled, along with all the other damaged homes. So in the aftermath, of course, police patrolled the affected areas, and soldiers from Fort Ben Harrison were also deployed to counter potential looters. The headline in the Indianapolis Times on Thursday, May 19th, announced that, quote, 200 U.S. troops added to guard cities' storm-swept sections. Also on May 20th, the Indianapolis Star reported that each soldier had been issued 5 rounds of live ammunition and that the soldiers and the police were under orders to shoot to kill looters in the areas that had been impacted by the tornado. So that's kind of a noteworthy event because we've seen, I think a lot of folks have seen when the National Guard is deployed for disaster relief to help provide security in some of the, you know, storm-torn areas. We've certainly seen that even this year with some of the tornadoes that have come through Indiana. But in this situation, this wasn't the National Guard. These were actual United States soldiers, federal soldiers from Fort Ben, which were deployed to provide security and carry live ammunition. It's unclear where the order came from. I'm guessing it probably came from the governor asking if the soldiers from the fort could assist. Indianapolis Star reported that the police and soldiers were patrolling under, quote, semi-military orders, although there's really no explanation of what exactly a semi-military order might entail. What I'm guessing happened was that National Guard takes time to call up. You know, you need to put out the word. Soldiers need to come from their homes, from their towns, and come together, get set up, things like that, while Fort Ben Harrison had federal soldiers already stationed there. You know, it's their full-time jobs. And were probably more readily available to come to the storm-impacted areas. As I noted, streetcar service was disrupted throughout the city, but particularly in the east side. Telephone service was also disrupted, and not only did the streetcar company send out repair crews to start clearing the tracks, but utilities, power, as well as Indiana Bell, the telephone company, also sent out crews to start clearing out debris and trying to get service back. Mayor John Duval toured the damaged areas on May 19th, and he conferred with members of the city council regarding potential relief efforts. However, as the Indianapolis News reported, it was impossible for the city to provide, you know, like monetary assistance to individual homeowners. But the city council did allocate some money for disaster relief in terms of repairing the city infrastructure, repairing any utilities in the area, things along those lines. Additionally, shelters were opened up. The Red Cross came in, opened up a few shelters for folks who had been displaced. Tomlinson Hall, downtown, right by the county courthouse, next door to the city market, was also opened up for refugees if they needed a place to stay. Governor Ed Jackson also toured the east side and encouraged donations from the public. Said Jackson, quote, I am mighty sorry for these people who suffered losses, and I know that to many of them it must be a severe blow. I feel that liberal contributions should be made throughout the state to any relief measures that are taken for the benefit of those whose homes were swept away. In terms of injuries, the number injured exceeded 150, which, considering the destruction on the east side and the number of homes that were destroyed, was rather low. Frankly, looking at some of those pictures, I was amazed that the casualty list was that limited. Several serious injuries were reported. Victims were taken to St. Vincent Hospital, Methodist Hospital, and St. Francis Hospital, while an emergency triage center was set up at Fire Station 20 on North Belleville Avenue. One death was immediately attributed to the storm. Two teenage boys, Earl Wolverton and Roger Frey, had taken shelter in the lobby of the Arthur Furniture Store at 2215 East Washington Street when that building collapsed around them. Rescuers had followed the sounds of the two knocking on debris and used a house moving jack to lift up the debris to free them. Unfortunately, Wolverton's injuries were too severe, and he passed away a few days later. Another person who also suffered severe injuries, kind of more blunt force injuries, survived the storm but passed away a few weeks later in June due to those injuries. So that is the story of the 1927 Indianapolis tornado. Now, we don't often see tornadoes hitting big cities. They certainly can. Several years ago, there was a tornado that went rampaging through Nashville, Tennessee, certainly a large city. We've had tornadoes come through various parts of Indianapolis. There was one down in Holmcroft. There's another one on the northeast side. I think it went past the Speedway like maybe 15 or 16 years ago. And there's been some more recent. In fact, earlier this spring, there was one that went through west side. And I'm sorry, the Speedway is actually northwest side. But this tornado just, it actually went through the downtown core. It went right along Washington Street, which is the, you know, when you think about a main street for Indianapolis, Washington Street is its main street. Meridian Street's also a main street. And it went running right through that intersection before it skipped over and really smashed into the east side. And when I'm thinking about, you know, this, again, going back to the casualty list, over 150 injured, imagine if that storm had hit at, you know, the height of the workday or towards the end of the day when, you know, there were people all throughout downtown and downtown was packed with workers and people downtown shopping. I mean, the death toll, and the injured and dead would have been, the numbers would have been huge. But the tornado came through at 8 p.m. on a Wednesday night when the downtown core has, well, certainly there's people there, is mostly empty. Folks have gone home. And thankfully, those buildings, the buildings there in the downtown area, brick, at the time, you know, more steel buildings were being built, were able to withstand the onslaught of the tornado, while the wood-frame homes on the east side did not. So again, that's the story of the 1927 tornado. There is a blog post related to this that came out several years ago. I will drop a link to that in the show notes. I encourage you to take a look at that blog post because it does list all the sources and it has links to several really interesting pictures that, from the Indiana Historical Society that show the aftermath of the tornado on the east side. Really amazing pictures to look at. So thank you again for listening to yesterday's Indianapolis, and stay tuned for future episodes.